Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio podcast, where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor, and that's with a K. Get it right. And I'm joined by a Mr.
Daniel Wilcox. That's Wilcox with a cock, so get that right. I'm not even joking. People, that will sound crude to some people, but the amount of people that spell my name wrong is insane. So
the right, yeah,
it does actually have phallus in it. So
get it right.
what a tone to start this episode. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Okay, Joanna Ben probably gonna listen back to this episode as well.
Be like, what the hell?
Yeah. Okay. So how's it going? Today we're going to be interviewing Joanna Penn. She's obviously a big name in the indie publishing world. I interviewed her about 3 years ago. I met her about 3 years ago. And I wonder if she's going to remember me.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
What a hook.
Yeah.
You have to find the answer by listening to the podcast. Yeah. But yeah, all good, man. So how's your writing week? How's creativeness?
Yeah, so I have just... Actually, I just wrote an essay. Well, I say it's an essay. It's like a blog post come essay. And I was trying to, like... I'm just not very good at writing nonfiction. It just doesn't come as easily as writing fiction. I feel like I can sort of force myself to get into fiction writing mode, but I don't quite know how to do this yet. So I guess,
you're almost quite self-conscious because it's you. It's not you putting a voice to someone else. It's you talking.
Yeah. You're not acting as another character. You're acting as yourself.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're quite good at doing the light-hearted copy for sales pitches and newsletters and stuff, but obviously it's a bit of a different tone to go into sort of straight nonfiction.
Yeah. I made like a little video for it as well whilst at work. So I'll put it online at some point and we'll link it up so people can see that. But it's interesting.
It's well worth a listen. It's really good.
What about you? What have you been writing?
Yeah, so I think just while I remember as well, we should probably acknowledge that we did miss last week's air date because we've both been super busy people launching Lazarus.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of that half of the original Project Dan complete.
Yeah, Project Dan complete, yeah.
So that's phase one of Project Dan's done.
Yeah.
Which what's that like a year later?
Almost exactly a year, yeah.
Yeah, with three novels in the end behind us as opposed to just the two that we were gunning for.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, we've been launching that. The launch has been it's been reasonable. It's obviously not the takeoff that we'd like, but, you know, it's sort of a growing experience. And with every book launch, we're getting better numbers. So that's what we're after.
Yeah. You got a cough as well? Because I've got a terrible cough, like a really tickly one.
I've had it for like... a few weeks now where it just won't shift.
Yeah, me too. I've got some Covonia, so I'm hoping that'll help me in the interview.
Yeah, just hand that through Skype for me.
Yeah. I can see you drinking it now. Okay.
It's been all systems go on the book launch. It's been quite fun.
Good. Have you got a big whip?
Yeah, so mine is, have you read Mr. Mercedes by Stephen King?
No, but I know the TV show is on.
Yes.
In the world right now, is it?
On the box.
On the box, that's the one.
Yeah, so I didn't actually know anything about it until I think it was on Friday. I read the book about, it was around Christmas time. Very much enjoyed it. And then it was a colleague at work actually told me that it was being turned into a TV show. And the first it aired last Friday, so I watched that over the weekend. And it's really weird because, I mean, Stephen King's obviously a very descriptive guy, so you kind of know what you get in the minute you start reading Stephen King. But it's the first time I've read, I've watched a direct sort of translation of a book to a film or a TV show. And literally the characters are as I envisioned and the locations are as I envisioned. And just the tone of it is all literally bang on. Like there's a scene with, I won't spoil this for anyone, but there's a scene of like a guy in a basement. I'm like, that's the basement I saw. And there's a part of like the guy, the main detective, Bill Hodgins, he's got a lazy boy armchair. And just his house, I'm like, that is exactly how I pictured it. It's
that shows Stephen King's skill, I think, he's able to sort of paint these pictures in your mind quite well.
And it's a very direct translation as well, because I know a lot of people complained about Under the Dome, which was a TV show came out last year, the year before, and how it kind of sways quite far from the book. But this seems to be spot on so far. So
Okay, so my big whip is, me and you were on the self-publishing podcast last Friday or something, which is kind of insane. You know, they're big influences for us and big inspirations, those guys, Johnny, Sean and Dave. And it was weird because I think because I've been listening to them so long, I feel like I know them quite well. So when we got on that call with them, it was almost like chatting to friends. I don't know, it was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, we did the boot camp, didn't we, and other things. So they'll set up regular events where they have people join them on cam. Obviously, they're not the audience, but they'll be on cam. But yeah, so we've interacted with them on some level before, and like you say, they're quite big influences. But it was quite surreal. It was awesome. Yeah,
and I think we got to, like, talk about Hawk and Cleaver and all the stuff that we're doing. And I don't know. Yeah, it's fun. It's interesting. So I definitely want to link to that when that's online. I mean, it's on YouTube now, but when it'll be in the podcast, I'm not too sure. But that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're just cool guys. And I think the thing that came across in the interview for me was that we're all guys that just like to tell stories. And some of the ways that we tell stories, I know we acknowledge this in the interview, a lot of the ways that we tell the stories or get our points across are similar. But then we also have a lot of stuff that we're doing that those guys are sort of doing their own thing as well. So
cool, man. So I think we're all warmed up, we're all ready for the interview section of the show. So is there anything else we need to tell the audience?
Buy Lazarus on Amazon and go on hawkandcleaver.com/ the promo will still be live. We have a promo on hawkandcleaver.com/promo where we're currently giving away 12 free post-apoc and horror books until the 23rd of August. So if you have time, jump on it there. Two of the books are ours. The rest of them are just fantastic other authors, including Justin Sloan, who's been on the podcast before, and grab yourself a free book.
Cool. Okay. Right. Let's talk to Joanna. So today we're joined by Joanna Penn. Joanna Penn is an award-nominated New York Times and USA Today best-selling author of thrillers under the pen name J.F. Penn. She also writes inspirational non-fiction for authors and is an award-winning creative entrepreneur and international professional speaker. And her site, thecreativepen.com, is regularly voted one of the top 10 sites for writers and self-publishers and also one of my favourite websites I've ever been on. Welcome to the show, Joanna.
Oh, thanks so much, and thanks for having me, guys, on the show. I'm very excited to be here. It's always good to catch up on audio.
Yeah. No worries. Thanks so much.
It's exciting to have you.
Yeah. So, Joanna, what are you currently geeking out on? What are you watching, reading, or is there any sort of technology you're loving at the minute?
Oh, it's funny. I was thinking about this. I in terms of watching, I'm one of those people who's waiting for Game of Thrones. So, you know, here in Britain, we're sort of waiting for it. So I'm excited about that. But in terms of geeking out, I'm reading a lot because the latest fiction novel I'm writing is about maps and cartography. Yeah. So I've been reading a lot of books on cartography, and, you know, there are actually map books everywhere in shops. So people are really into the sort of physical maps. And it's interesting because, you know, I read digitally so much that it's lovely to actually get these sort of big photo books with all these beautiful maps on. And you can actually actually get a lot of the old maps, like the Mapa Mundi, which is like 1,000 years old, online now. So I've been sort of geeking out on that type of thing as I try and finish this fantasy novel and also try and come up with some cover designs. So I'm spending a lot of time looking at antique compasses and random things like that and putting them all on Pinterest. So that's a bit of a tip for people. I use Pinterest and I have one board per novel, and as I'm writing the novel or researching, I'm saving images onto Pinterest, which does two things. Like, one, it sort of gives a physical, you know, visual view of the book, and I share that on Twitter and Facebook along the way. It kind of gives my readers and fans something to look at, and also it's marketing. So once that page is done, once that board is done and that book is done, I link to it in the show notes, in the book, on the author notes. The notes at the back. And then people can kind of go and see the things that I was writing about, which I think is pretty cool. So I'm always geeking out on new things, but at the moment, I'm kind of stuck in ancient cartography.
what set you on maps in the first place? I think this one's been boiling away in the background for a little while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I moved to Bath out of London, and where we live in Bath is quite a big antique map community, and which is, again, kind of odd. And there's a map shop round the corner, and, I walk past it almost every day when I go to the cafe where I write in the mornings. And I was looking in the windows every day, and I was like, oh, what if, you know, you inherited a map shop, and then what if you found you could actually, like, travel through maps? And I think this has also come about because the theme of borders. We went to Israel last year, and you know, borders are a really big deal in Israel and the West Bank. And then obviously we had the Brexit vote, and not to get political, but you know, I have some feelings about that. And so a lot of this stuff around borders and where you can and cannot go is sort of the underlying theme, and the traveling is something I do all the time. And you got, I mean, you guys know traveling is not so pleasant anymore. I mean, getting somewhere is a bit of a nightmare. So I just had all these ideas bubbling around, and yeah, it does feel like it's probably been almost a year now since I started thinking of the ideas. And the book hopefully will be out by Christmas 2017. So that's the plan.
I find it quite interesting that you say that that there are big map sections down these bookstores, because I can imagine it's almost like they probably do have everywhere in Lincoln where I am, but it must be that moment when you go out looking for a car, and it's only when you start particularly looking for a model of car that suddenly you see them everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, you definitely start noticing these things. The other thing is about language, which is fascinating. Another topic I'm researching at the moment is financial investments, which just, you know, I was always so bored by that. But, the language of cartography, the language of finance, also, you know, the language in any kind of subgenre keeps people out. And once I started to learn the language of cartography, like even something like the compass rose, which is the compass they draw in the corner of a map. I didn't know it was called a compass rose.
That's a really lovely name.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And they're not always roses. Obviously, they're all different things. And that's where there are little cartouches and emblems and creatures, and that type of stuff is really cool. So when you start delving into something, and I really love the research process for my fiction. It's so important to me. It's kind of what I love about being a writer. So yeah, when you start learning the language of a new topic, you can actually go much deeper in your research online because you almost know what to search for.
Wow, and we're in the age now where you can like get on Google and just start sort of exploring this kind of stuff just from your, I mean, I do this from my home and my bed and stuff, but you actually go to these places, right? You travel a lot for your research.
Yes. And again, that's, you know, when I looked, when I was in my miserable day job back in the day, working as an IT consultant, when I, Tim Ferriss came out with the 4-Hour Work Week, you guys remember that? And he talked a lot about lifestyle design. And when I thought about the lifestyle I wanted, and I think this is really important for people to think about, you have to think about the lifestyle you want in 5 years' time and in 10 years' time. Because actually, if you keep like writing books or you keep blogging or you keep podcasting, you can actually create this future. So you have to decide what future you want, because otherwise you might just end up there. So I decided back then, I was like, okay, what do I really love doing? I love reading, I love writing, and I love traveling. So what what job or what can I do with my life that will enable me to do those things? Oh, yes, and earn really good money. And that's how I got into being a writer and blogging and podcasting and all that, was basically trying to design a lifestyle where I could travel as a tax deductible thing, you know, for my business. And it would support my writing habits, but also my traveling habit. So, yeah. I've got loads of books next to me here, looking at the next research trips for 2018, starting to plan that.
Wow, it's one of those cheeky little bonuses of being freelance, I guess. But I mean, a lot of your successes, as you said on your podcast, for people that haven't listened to the Creative Pen podcast yet, how long has that been running for now? And what would you say to the Joanna Penn that was about to launch the Creative Pen podcast, blog, sorry?
Well, I started the blog in December 2008, and I started the podcast in sort of spring 2009. So it's actually one of the oldest sort of podcasts around writing, or one of the oldest podcasts full stop. You know,
called podcast then? Or was it?
Not really. There was podiobooks.com was around, so that the word pod was included in things, but podcasting was very new. It was kind of like download audio was what people would say. just to be amusing, you know, we're talking on Skype. The first interviews I did for probably the first couple of months, I would phone people up on a landline and put them on speakerphone and hold a recorder, you know, in front of the phone.
I'm just trying to remember.
That must have been amazing.
I'm just trying to remember what a landline is.
Yes, no, exactly. So, I mean, this has happened all over the internet in terms of the spheres we work in, like podcasting and being an author. You know, back in 2008, there was no international Kindle. So this is what's so crazy. You know, when I started my website, there wasn't an international Kindle. That came the following year as well. So it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, that I've been around long enough for that. But you sort of going back, I think the most important thing is I didn't start what it is now, a multi six figure business. I didn't start a podcast in order to make money with a podcast or to have, you know, tens of thousands of listeners. That's not where you start. What you start with is, what will I spend my time on when nobody is listening, no one is watching, nobody cares?
That's the pain of the journey, isn't it?
Exactly. So I really, you know, that was my third blog. The Creative Pen was my third blog. So I had started two more and let them go because I got bored. And that was the third one. And another tip is calling it the Creative Pen it was a very good decision. But as I said, it was my third one because the other ones were so niche that, like, the first blog was around career change. And the thing is, as soon as you do something around career change or whatever, you are hemmed in. And if you start changing your mind as to what you actually want to do, it's very hard to continue. So I'm really happy with the Creative Pen because I can just use it for the rest of my life for whatever I'm doing because it's, you know, about me. So I think, you know, looking back, I would say to me then, or to anyone starting now, is, you know, just go ahead and start and don't worry about what's going to happen. You cannot possibly see where you're going to be in 10 years' time. But what you can do is, you know, aim for the future that you want, and it might just happen. So I didn't even consider that I would write fiction back in 2008, 2009. I was a nonfiction writer. So, you know, things have really changed.
So what was the first book, the nonfiction book, was that called Career Change? Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. And so at what point did you go, okay, I want to do some fiction now? I'm tired of talking about real stuff. I want to dive into my fantasy.
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was that after I'd been doing the Creative Pen for a year. So again, this was back in 2008, 2009, when self-publishing was still a dirty word, when, you know, it just wasn't socially acceptable at all to self-publish. And, you know, there weren't the Kindle millionaires of 2009, 2010, John Locke and Amanda Hocking, you know, people who we don't even hear about anymore. You know, they were starting to come on the scene in America, but the Kindle hadn't gone international, and I was living in Australia at the time. So basically, I had this blog and I was blogging about how to self-publish, and I was just kind of bored on that topic. And, you know, I kind of still am. I mean, how to publish really is the tiniest bit of our journey. The interesting bit is the writing and the marketing, which are the two big things that people spend their time on. Publishing takes, you know, an hour. It's everything else. So I was like, okay, how can I want to carry on this blog, but what else can I talk about? And so I thought, well, I could consider fiction. And then and I thought, oh, I'll do NaNoWriMo. And then I'll kind of, you know, I didn't take it seriously at all. And so I did NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, coming up in November every year. Yeah. And, you know, I started writing then. I also had a guy on my podcast, Tom Evans, who said to me that I probably had a block around fiction because, you know, I went to Oxford University and my mum was an English literature teacher. And, you know, I basically had this feeling that if you were going to write a novel, it had to be, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning or Booker Prize winning literary fiction. And that, you know, that's just not true. So as soon as I got over that block and thought, you know what, I just like reading thrillers, I'll write a thriller like Dan Brown. And that's what I started doing. And I'm now, I have 9 books in the Arcane series now and loads of other books, but you know, that's how I started. So, you know, it pretty much was, I need something to blog about. So why don't I learn about it? And also, you know, just getting over that block, which is so important.
So obviously you've got quite a balance of fiction and non-fiction works. How much do you find your non-fiction works support your fiction and vice versa? And is non-fiction something that all writers should sort of work on in some capacity, in your opinion, or is it kind of each to their own on how they want to work?
Yeah, so again, it's kind of interesting. So I use 2 different names, or 3 different names, but Joanna Penn does my nonfiction, JF Penn does my fiction, my thrillers. And I certainly don't think that fiction authors need to write nonfiction. It's not necessary. The main thing for you to consider is, what is your definition of success? So I know fiction authors who make 7 figures, and, you know, 6-7 figures is a very good income for anyone. So you certainly don't have to do nonfiction. Now, I write nonfiction. I mean, as I said, I started with nonfiction. My original career goal was to sort of be a British Tony Robbins, sort of self-help guru. So I really have, one side of me really enjoys the self-help genre, and I read a lot of self-help. That, you know, in terms of, if you looked at my bookshelf, half of it is self-help and self-development and all of these habit things and productivity. And, you know, so I like reading that, and I like writing that. And the other half is thrillers, and I like reading and writing those. So I certainly think it's more about your personality and what you want to do with your own creative juices as such. And it, again, if you have ideas about it, I mean, I have a lot of ideas for nonfiction that I want to write as well as fiction. So for example, this winter, I've been waiting for Saturnalia as such. I'm going to be working on a book on the shadow and how writers can use the shadow in their writing and kind of tap into that darker side and look at Jungian psychology and all of that. I mean, which is something, self-censorship is something that I think writers need to get over, and I do as well. So these are things, you know, I'm fascinated by that. So I think I'm always going to write nonfiction as well. But in terms of crossover, it's very interesting. I would say only about 5% of my nonfiction audience crosses over with my fiction. So this is a very good reason why having 2 separate author brands, 2 separate websites, 2 separate email lists, I think is important. Some people say it isn't, but personally, I think it is, because the way I talk to my fiction audience is very different to the way I talk to my nonfiction audience. You know, again, coming back to language, the language that we're using on this show is not the language we would use if you were interviewing JF Penn and our audience were thriller readers. You know, it'd be a very different conversation. So I think targeting your customers and your, you know, appealing to the right audience is really important. And even just the fact that on Amazon and Kobo and iBooks, my author name is only linked to my fiction or only linked to my nonfiction is critical for things like algorithms and machine learning. You know, I think it's just really important. So I like doing them both, but certainly not necessary.
If you this is a difficult question. If you had to choose between one or the other, which side would you choose, and could you?
No.
Who could you kill off?
Clearly not. I clearly wouldn't choose. I mean, I think about this all the time. Here's a big tip for people. Don't do what I do. It's so much work. I mean, and also I've got this third pen name now, writing Sweet Romance with my mum. And, you know, I helped her with her first book because, you know, She's 70 and she needed a bit of income and she likes writing. I was like, hey, mum, why don't you write a romance? So, but I've given myself a third job. So it's kind of crazy. So definitely it's very hard to maintain several brands, but if, again, if your personality is like that and you feel like you can't do anything else, then go for it.
Do you feel like they not so you say it's not more work, sure, but do you feel like they feed energy into you to inspire to go to the other pen name? So maybe you get so far with JF Pen and you're feeling a little bit drained on there, it'll give you the energy to jump over to the other pen name. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it must be nice to have like a release valve.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd call it a relief valve. I mean, at the moment, I mean, I try and schedule my time properly, but inevitably I fail. So this week I'm editing the MacBook for JF Pen. Next week I'm editing A Sweet Romance with my mom. And when I get back from holiday, I'm away for a week walking, which I'm really looking forward to. I will be doing the first draft on a new nonfiction called The Health Writer, which is which I'm co-writing with a medical doctor. So I'm like, what am I doing? This is crazy. So I do normally try and take a bit more time in between the pen names, but it's a lot of work. But then again, that's what I was saying about creating your future. Inevitably, if you start another pen name, you have to do all the work that you would have to do, you know, with the name you have. So for example, Twitter, I'm quite active on Twitter at The Creative Pen with a double N. And I thought about, should I set up another one for JF Pen? And I did years ago, but I just let it slide because I just can't maintain multiple, you know, things. I do have different Facebook pages, different websites, etc., but I behave quite differently for each pen name. So it's definitely hard to manage. But for me, it's worth it.
So one of my favorite things that you do on The Creative Pen is you have these like yearly reviews and yearly sort of goal posts and that kind of thing. So when you say have you got like 10-year goals that you're sort of working towards every year? Like how does your goal setting work on your side? Because I know it's such a big part of what I do for my own sort of success, if I have any. So how does that work for you in terms of setting the goals and how much do you stick to them, I guess?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had a bit of an interesting moment last year because, you know, I started in 2006, so I'd reached the kind of 10 years, and my 10-year goals that I'd set way back in 2006, I had vastly exceeded. So I'm kind of, I think, you know, there's a saying, it might have been Tony Robbins, you know, we overestimate what we can achieve in 1 year and we underestimate what we can achieve in 10 years.
Yes.
Well, I've kind of given up on 10-year goals. What I do have every year is I have, you know, what am I going to do this year? And then I also have a couple of things on my wall. You know, what body of work do I want to create? I do have a sort of 100 books by 50, so I'm 42. So I want to have 100 books by 50, which is definitely doable. I've got about 25 at the moment.
Is this why you've got the third edition of the market, but you're going to do a new edition every year.
Yeah, new edition. You know what? That edition took... Well, I budgeted 2 weeks to do the new edition. It took me nearly 2 months.
Well, I mean, wow. I was thinking, I think I read the first edition and I was thinking marketing, and especially in publishing and indie publishing, is changes so often.
Yeah. It's changed so much. Well, the last edition was 2014. So, and here's another tip, people. Nonfiction, if you write nonfiction that is based on things that change, you have to update it and it's a right pain, or withdraw the book. Whereas fiction, you don't have to update. So if you're thinking 10-year goals or...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
50-year goals, then consider using fiction, because you don't actually have to update stories, and that's really good.
Yeah.
So that's why I've kind of pivoted in my nonfiction to things like The Successful Author Mindset is a book that I might update, but it won't be because it has technical information in. It's because I might just expand it. But in terms of goals, so my goals are, you know, am I creating a body of work that I'm proud of? And the body of work, this is important for you guys. Your body of work includes your podcasts. It includes the people you help, in my opinion. It includes everything you're putting out there that, people associate with your name. So it's kind of your brand. I achieved my goal of making, you know, a really good income. And my husband left his job 2 years ago now to join the business. So that was my other goal. And so now we're sort of thinking of the next steps and, you know, making art and investing so that I can maybe step back from some of the more, you know, like, for example, speaking is very tiring for me. So I'd like to step back from speaking. What type of life do I want to be living when I'm 50 is kind of what I'm thinking about now. Although that's, it seems really old, but it's not.
Yeah, I think that's one of the important things that you hit on there, and I think it's something that I've seen a lot with people that do find success, is that there are a lot of authors out there, a lot of people out there that tend to just keep pushing forward, just every day working on the production. But not a lot of people do take that opportunity to stop and reflect and think, you know, how is this actually working for me in the long run? What are the things that I want to achieve in X many years? And you seem to, I've listened to your podcast for I think about 2 years now. You've always seemed to have that vision of what it is that I want. Was that something that you've always had, or is that something that sort of come over time?
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely had that way, you know, at the beginning when I was listening to Tim Ferriss, Gary Vaynerchuk as well with his
Gary
CrossFit
V.
Book. Yeah, Gary V. Like, I'm not, you know, he's not really my type of person, but that book, Crush It, really helped me think about what I wanted to do with my life. So the emphasis on body of work is really important. So for example, the romance, and I always said I would never write romance. And the fact is I'm not writing it. What happens is my mum writes the first draft and then I basically rewrite it because, let's face it, I've written, you know, 24 books. I'm writing my 25th. She's on her now third book. So I can write better language, I guess. I can write better.
Much
but,
gooder.
She wouldn't mind me saying that. But doing that is part of, you know, we want to help our family. And I, you know, she's not the person who's just going to accept cash. And so I feel like helping her is also like helping the community, and I'm learning things and it's really interesting. And people like, this is also a sad truth because you guys like horror, right? The sad truth is that people love romance, and it's so much easier to sell romance than it is to sell dark fiction. So it's quite interesting from a marketing point of view. But in terms of being, I don't think I have always been, I definitely drown in work a lot of the time. And this is actually a challenge for me right now, is I'm probably spending 8 to 15 hours a week doing email right now. Yeah, I know. And that's all, it comes under the heading of customer support in a way, because these are people in my community asking questions. And also it's kind of marketing, because every email that you do, you know, they might buy a book, or, you know, think about how I can design my life so I don't have to do that much email without being, you know, considered a bit of a dick, because, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't do my own email. So in terms of, I think this lifestyle design is a constant shuffle between what you're doing and where, you know, where you are now and where you want to be. And so I definitely don't get it right all the time. I'm very lucky, or, you know, I'm grateful that I've been able to create a living that's based off of writing. But now I'm like, okay, So I don't want the email thing has just crept up. And as you get a bigger audience, you inevitably get more of this stuff. So I'm having to think about processes for a bigger business. And that type of thing is not something that I think is talked about a lot in the author community, because most authors don't want a bigger business. So these are some challenges that start to occur, I think, later on in your author career. I think it depends where you are. If you're still working on your first book or your second book or even your seventh book, you know, most people who have seven books are still not making that much money. So, you know, this is the thing. You have to consider what you want to achieve and what you're willing to do to get there, and then change course along the way.
Is this so recently you set up Curl Up Press, and I think I was listening on your podcast, you had a maybe like a realization. I think you were over with Dean Wesley Smith and Catherine Rushin talking about going to like the small press model. Is this what sort of gave you that idea, make that choice and go for small press?
Yeah, so basically up until sort of December, October 2016, I was very focused on digital. So ebooks, global ebooks, so Wide, Kobo iBooks, etc. And also CreateSpace, and also audio with ACX. And then I went to Dean and Chris's Coast Masterclass, which is in Oregon. And I consider Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush to be like my mentors. They've been around in publishing for like 40 years, and they're amazing. They're like the fairy godparents of the indies. They really are. Oh, they're totally my gurus. And this year I'm going back to speak at the Coast workshop, so I'm really excited about that. But basically, I sat down with Chris. She's so great. I mean, they're both just no BS. I really appreciate that. And Chris was like, why are you cutting off a whole load of income stream and discoverability? What, you know, why are you not doing proper print? And I was like, okay, then I maybe should do that. So, and she was like, yeah. So we set up Curl Up Press. So it's at curlupress.com, or you can get a .press domain name, so we have curlup.press as well. Oh, cool. Which is quite cool. And yeah, so we're now using Ingram Spark, the main reason to use Spark is because they distribute to libraries and bookstores around the world. Like, for example, in their last newsletter, they announced new distribution channels into China. So what you've got to think with Amazon is an American company that is often in the news, and that a lot of people have problems with, not just readers. You know, some readers and people have problems with Amazon, but if you think about whole countries who have problems with American companies, then, you know, even though Ingram actually is an American company too, has a British arm and has international partners. So basically the aim of Curl Up Press is to get print books available and selling into these other channels that you're not going to get if you're only publishing with CreateSpace. And it's actually, it's really very reasonably priced. You can also do much bigger print runs. So if you're a speaker, it's a really good idea to work with Ingram, because, for example, when I spoke in Australia earlier this year, I ordered like 100 books to get delivered, and I only paid sort of $2 a book, and they got printed and distributed in Australia. So it was far cheaper for me as an international speaker to get my books printed through Ingram than, ordering author copies in, you know, off CreateSpace and then getting them shipped, for example. So that's really important. What else? They have lots of promotional opportunities to booksellers. So I just had a feature in the last Ingram magazine that went out to something like 1500 booksellers in the UK. So you can, you know, get involved with that. Yes. And basically, in terms of Curl Up Press, the idea is that it's a separate website that represents my books only. and so it's not a publishing company. I'm not open to submissions as such. But also with foreign rights sales, it's much better to have a press type website than an author website, because, you know, even though, and I'm not giving up on being an indie. I'm an indie, but a lot of foreign publishers, you know, prefer to kind of work with other publishers. So if you have a official looking site as opposed to, hey, I'm just an author, there might be a possibility to get more interest that way. So lots of reasons I've done it, but mainly it's kind of like, look, a lot of people read print. So why not maximize your print distribution?
Also, can we just quickly talk about IP? Because I know that's been a big part of your recent like mission in the podcast. And also, I just heard that Netflix had bought Millerworld, Mark Miller's independent comic book company, which was or his catalogue, which is really interesting. I mean, is there anything that you're doing now that you weren't doing like a year ago in terms of getting your IP out there into the world?
And thank you, Luke, for being such a dedicated follower of my podcast. I'm very impressed. So intellectual property rights, if people aren't really clear, you know, definitely when we write a book, we're not writing a book. We're basically creating an intellectual property asset that we can license in multiple ways. And Dean Wesley-Smith has a good book on this come out recently called The Magic Bakery, where he talks about this in a kind of simple way, you know, having a pie shop and with all kinds of things in. So I definitely had a few pennies drop around that. I would say that one thing I have shifted on, I'm definitely still a big audio fan, but I've done a lot more nonfiction audio in the last year because nonfiction audio listeners are less sensitive to length of audiobook and less price sensitive. So I'm making a lot more money in nonfiction audio in the last year. I'm also not going exclusive to ACX because in the last year, the exclusivity contract between Audible and iTunes has lapsed. So there are, or finished. And so there are going to be a lot more audio opportunities for authors coming up in the next year. We've seen one with Draft to Digital and Findaway Voices in the last few months. So that's kind of audio. Print, as we've talked about, I've expanded a lot in the last year. Foreign rights, I mean, I was up until sort of middle of last year, I had 5 languages in various numbers of my books. I was working with translators and self-publishing in foreign languages. But what I've decided is I just do not have the bandwidth to do that. So now I'm looking at licensing foreign rights, and that's another thing that Curl Up Press is doing. And we've joined the IPG, which is the Independent Publishers Guild in Britain, and we're going along to their events. So trying to learn from the industry as to how to take books out to market in that way, how to take IP to market. Also working, as you and I've talked about, with a screenwriter on a adaptation of one of my trilogies, the London crime thriller trilogy. And like you mentioned, Netflix, obviously, I think right now everybody wants to get a Netflix deal or an Amazon video deal, you know, far bigger than a Hollywood deal, really. You know, people want TV now. So I'm definitely trying to, and in fact, you know, just talking about this, selling books is very hard. And if you look at the Amazon charts or the New York Times or the USA Today, a lot of the books that are in the charts are books that have adaptations. So Game of Thrones, again, is another good example. George R. R. Martin was making decent money, but when the TV show went nuts, you know, he's like multi-billionaire or whatever he is now. the guy is doing, and it's not all about money, but we all want our stories out there. So I think, turning your stories into these multiple things, you know, thinking about, I'd love to get into gaming, you know, lots of things about turning our stories into other IP licensing, basically.
I do find that interesting. It's a whole new way of framing it, because I know that, especially for myself, when I started writing, when you start writing your first book and you're very much of the mindset of, this is going to be a book, but you don't generally frame it as, this is a story that could be distributed in other mediums and essentially just could be bigger. I think people get stuck into that mindset of, this is one thing, I'll move on to the next, rather than, because we're looking at the minute with we had our first book in our post-apocalyptic thriller, The Rot series, come out in February, and at the minute we're looking at putting that into audiobook and other ideas for that as well. And it's nice to know that you can take that one property and sort of make it a lot bigger than it just is.
And again, with fiction, it doesn't age. And again, George R. R. Martin, you know, the first book he wrote, what, like 20 years ago or something. And in fact, Stephen King right now, you know, the Dark Tower, well, you know, they're remaking it. This is the great thing about stories. They don't age. So even if you have an old story from years ago, you can still look at exploiting that intellectual property right. But what you just pointed out there is the reason why most authors will sign with a publisher for very little money. So one of the horrible truths of publishing in Britain right now is that if you're a new writer, you might only get offered £5,000 for your book, and you might never see any more royalties. So, and I'm just like, it makes me so sad that people would give up their intellectual property rights for that. But as you say, they don't see that. They just think, oh, wow, somebody thinks I'm a good writer and they're actually going to pay me as well. And many writers are signing digital-only deals with no advance. So this is what's interesting. It's that, how do you value a story? This is incredibly hard. Or a nonfiction book. And in fact, nonfiction is much easier to value, because generally nonfiction authors have a whole back end of products that will make them money along the way.
I'm just trying to work out what the was that no advance digital only deal? What is that? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's for those people who don't want to like upload to KDP themselves. I mean, it really is. It's basically right. There are a lot of digital only publishers around the world right now who essentially are uploading. Well, and agents are doing it too. So agents are uploading their clients' backlists to Amazon. That's the Amazon White Glove program, where agents get a bit of a kick, you know, for that. And so, yeah, it's interesting. Publishing, traditional publishing is not how it used to be. Now, you know, I absolutely take a traditional publishing deal if it was something that was a lot bigger than I could do myself. So, and in fact, it's funny, we're talking about this. I know a lot of traditionally published authors, and I was in a Facebook group today, and people were talking about how long their books are. So this fantasy book I'm doing will be about 65,000 words, which is kind of the length I generally do. And everyone's like, well, I'm contracted for 100,000, and, you know, I'm contracted for 120. And the fact is, you can't actually make more money selling a book that's that much longer. So I'm like, why would you write a book that's that long when you could write three books and make a box set? And, you know, so there are many things we can do as indies that can't necessarily be done in traditional publishing. People, again, comes back to definition of success. Do you want the pat on the back? Do you want the kudos? Do you want Random House on the spine of your book? Or do you want to be living your writing? You know, how do you define success?
Yeah, one of the things that I find quite interesting with so you've released, just how long ago was it you released the Market Your Book third edition?
July 2017.
Yeah, and so you're doing this work with your mother, obviously the Sweet Romance series, but rather than use your current existing list of lots and lots of people, and obviously we understand why, because of pollution of also boughts and everything, you've started from scratch, and you've literally brought yourself back to your 2008-2009 Joanna. How have you found that experience, and what have you learned through going through that experience, especially in a more modern setting, that you've kind of put into that book, and what lessons could you give to new writers or writers with no current list that you've learned?
Yeah, so it's definitely not original Joanna, because this Joanna knows quite a lot of things. So, you know, knowledge is everything. So, for example, I set up the author website in about half an hour, and I've got a tutorial at thecreativepen.com/author website if people, you know, need to set up a website. So that's like one thing. I mean, some authors will spend months on website and email lists. I can set up that stuff really fast. Obviously publishing, I use Vellum to publish now, and you can also use Vellum for print publishing. I have a team, I have editors, I have cover designers. So when you have your processes in place, it can be a lot quicker. But in terms of what we did, so yes, we decided to and I haven't announced the name publicly yet, so that's why I'm not mentioning it, but I probably will in 2018, once things are, you know, once we have enough books. But basically we are writing a series. So, book, you know, following the romance authors like Bella Andre, Barbara Freethy, people who have been making money for ages as indies, writer series so that people want to go from book to book. So there are, you know, by the end of a book, there will be a happy ever after and there will be a link into the next book. So a character that you want to see developed in the next book. So that's really important. We're using KDP Select. So although I'm wide for Joanna Penn and JF Penn, in general, I have a couple of books that are Select, but I've gone exclusive with Amazon for the romance pen name, because if you are a new author and you have less than three books in general, or less than three books in a series, then you should probably do KDP Select, because iBooks and Kobo and Google Play really need a lot more books in order to make it worthwhile. We're using Amazon ads and Facebook ads, so just paid advertising to get things moving, and we have an email list sign up on the website. So just basically, you can do this if you have a series with a good cover, with well-edited books, some paid advertising. We're doing print book giveaways on Goodreads every 2 weeks, so building up a, you know, sort of people on Goodreads, readers on Goodreads, getting reviews that way, and then just using KDP Select free days, and every time a new book comes out, we do ads to the first book in the series. So that's pretty much it. I'm you know, no social media other than Facebook ads. Well, we post one picture a day on the Sweet Romance pen name page, but I got my VA to schedule 6 months. So basically we don't even look at it. But you need to, in order to do Facebook ads, you need a page. So you have to set up a page, but we're not using it actively, and we're not using any other social media. So it's because pretty much, you know, I can't manage another active pen name. I manage JF Penn and Joanna Penn are active, and you know, I do all the things I do. So this had to be quite passive. I've also, in terms of expectation and definition of success, my mum has been amazing. I tried to work with my dad and he was a nightmare. but my mum is amazing in that I said to her, look, mum, you know, you might make a few hundred quid, but you won't make significant money until you've been writing a year, and probably until you've been writing a couple of years and you've got, say, 10 books. So she understands that. And we've got a plan for the series. And yeah, so it's working really well. But definitely, if people are starting from scratch, think about a series in a genre that people actually buy. So we've gone with sweet romance, obviously no sex. This is my mum. So this is all sweet romance, just a kiss, and very genre specific covers, Amazon ads, Facebook ads, author website with an email sign up. That's pretty much all you need.
Wow. That's like the modern equivalent of like me painting the shed with my dad. Like starting a publishing company. And,
No. It's going to make us a lot more money than painting the shed with your dad. Okay,
you haven't seen this shed.
Coming back to intellectual property rights, because I talked about this with my mum too. You know, I said to her, mum, you realise that these intellectual property rights would last 70 years after you die. And that actually excites her because, you know, we're not a traditionally wealthy family or anything. So she's very excited to think about leaving an estate. I mean, hopefully she's going to be Barbara Cartland and she's going to live for another, you know, 30 years and just like write hundreds of books. And, you know, so this is going to make money while she's alive, but also after she's gone.
What's your morning routine like, Joanna? And how do you manage your productivity with your work?
Basically, I'm at the cafe at 7. And I do creation in the morning, and then I go to yoga or go for a walk, and then I do my email and marketing and business stuff in the afternoon. So it's pretty simple: create in the morning, business in the afternoon.
Cool. Okay. And just quickly before we've got a quick fire round. I don't know if we've mentioned that before, but before that, we just want to ask what's next for Joanna Penn and JF Penn and Curl Up Press.
Oh, well, I kind of mentioned it before. So the MacBook, which still doesn't have a name for JF Penn and Joanna Penn, The Healthy Writer will be out in January 2018, which will be covering all the problems, the physical problems that authors have, which we found are very many. And a lot of them are very similar to computer workers in general. But yeah, The Healthy Writer out in January 2018.
Cool. Okay, so we've got a very, very fast quick fire round for you. Dan, are you ready?
I am so ready.
Joanna, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Dan, do you want to go first or would you like me to go first?
I'll shoot first. Okay, number one, Amazon or Google?
Depends for what?
Number two.
Just in general, quick fire.
Amazon.
Okay, favourite country you've lived in?
England, obviously.
Seaweed or grass?
Seaweed.
Fiction or non-fiction?
That's really hard. Fiction.
What was the last book you read?
Oh, I read a book called Past Mortems, which is all about death culture and Bart's Pathology Museum. Awesome if you're a vanilla goth like me.
The one creative you'd want to meet?
Oh, that's a tough one. Picasso.
What's your biggest hobby outside of writing?
Walking. I do a lot of... I've started doing ultra marathons now as well, so I do a lot of long walks.
Glass half fool or glass half wise man, whatever that means.
Glass of gin and tonic just about empty at this point.
Best answer. What was the best Christmas present you've ever received?
Don't really do Christmas. My husband's Jewish.
All right. Okay, last question. Would you like to come back on the show in the future at any point?
Of course. Right. You're hey. I really enjoyed talking to you guys. It's been fun.
Cool. So where can we follow you in your work, Joanna?
So come along to thecreativepen.com, pen with a double N, and you can get the free author blueprint, which is just, you know, got loads of stuff and videos and everything. And also the Creative Pen podcast, which has like 300 odd episodes now. So come over there too. And my fiction is at jfpen.com.
Cool. And I would definitely recommend the Creative Pen podcast to anyone who's listened to this. I've been listening to it for a long time and it is life-changing. It's a really amazing podcast.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. Thanks so much.
It's our pleasure.
No worries. Thank you. So I just want to say a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, our patrons over at patreon.com/forkandcleaver, and thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, because without you, I'd be alone. Thanks, Dan.
You're very welcome.
And thanks again, Joanna, so much. Thank you. I know you've got to shoot off, so we'll let you go.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.